Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Waves and Beaches, The Powerful Dynamics of Sea and Coast, by Willard Bascom and Kim McCoy. Narrated by Rich Miller. Publisher's Note: This audiobook includes bonus material. Please visit tantor.com and type Waves and Beaches into the search box. Follow the link to the book's page. Then, under the Supplemental Content section, please enter the access code WAVES, and then click the Unlock button to access the bonus material. The code should be entered in all lowercase letters. All figures and tables referenced in this audiobook can be found in the bonus material. Preface to the Third Edition. Generations of scientists, surfers, and sailors have used Willard Bascom's classic Waves and Beaches. This third edition celebrates the relationship of the sea and the land in the 21st century. And although time has passed since the first publication, the crashing of waves and the formation of beaches have not changed. The sun's heat still creates the winds, which transform into waves until dying in turbulence upon a shore. However, our measurement techniques, instrumentation, and interactions with the waves have all changed. The numbers of surfers, divers, kayakers, sailors, and people living in the coastal areas have increased immensely. The size of ships and the number of offshore structures have grown into a web of international commerce that influences all humans. These changes now affect our urban planning, large-scale funding, and political decision-making, all upon an undeniably rising sea level and changing climate. But still, by understanding the origins of coastal dynamics, societies can anticipate coastal changes and respond to those changes in support of the well-being of their members. This edition of Waves and Beaches will help you take action, and is in part why I became involved with its writing. Satellites have deepened our understanding of the rapid changes affecting our coastlines. We now observe our planet's dynamic distribution of water, ice, and water vapor through distant eyes. Water has acted as a thermostat to keep our planet habitable, but our thermostat, comfortably stable for most of the past 4,000 years, has been reset. We know our climate history from the story told by a million years of atmospheric gases trapped in glacial ice in Greenland and Antarctica, the amounts of which reveal periods of warm and cold. Coral reefs, oceanic sediments, tree rings, and plant pollen data recount our ocean temperatures over the same chapter of history. These are irrefutable records of our planet's ancient sea levels, ocean currents, and atmospheric weather patterns. These ancient dynamics have been disrupted by rapid population growth, the use of fossil fuels, the damming of rivers, the changing sediment loads, and the diversion of water flowing through estuaries and deltas as we contaminate aquifers with chemical pollutants. There is no alibi. The world's oceans are experiencing more intense hurricanes, rising sea levels, coastal erosion, storm surges, and saltwater intrusion into our freshwater aquifers. The waves and beaches of the world are elevating their battle during this swiftly transforming era, the most turbulent time since the rise of humanity. My awareness of the sea was early and multifaceted. By age 5, I had crossed the Pacific and Atlantic several times. I was body surfing by age 9, free diving at 11, sailing at 13. Many of my teenage years were spent diving and exploring the same Pacific coast as Willard Bascom did in the 1940s. I have measured waves at sea from above, below, and within. I have spent many decades of my life aboard seagoing vessels, ashore examining beaches, all the while diving, surfing, and traveling the world's shores. At universities in Europe, on the Baltic and Mediterranean seas, I studied math and physics, then oceanography in graduate school, where I encountered the first edition of Waves and Beaches as a textbook. My professional involvement with waves began with funding from the Nearshore Sediment Transport Study, NSTS, which began where Bascom left off in the late 1970s. I became part of the next wave of coastal research in the 1980s. In the ensuing decades, I plunged into the measurement of ocean turbulence, polar region science, oozing mud of the Amazon, instrument development, and global scale changes. In the latter 1990s, Willard Bascom and I became friends. We spoke of diverse topics, sharing many interests, including ancient history, bronzes from the age of Pericles, and waves. Indeed, as a father would interact with a son, he would give me homework to complete. He had not slowed down with age. Bascom would say, "Read this and tell me what you think." Or he would ask me, "How do they measure this now?" One day he handed me the second edition of Waves and Beaches and commanded, "Read this and tell me what it needs." That was the spark that marked the beginning of my transition from Bascom's student to being his collaborator. This edition, Bascom's last homework assignment for me, keeps the spirit of adventure alive while providing knowledge pertinent to the changes affecting us in the 21st century. It is my hope that this third edition of Waves and Beaches will help you take action and create your spark in the sea. Prologue. Is there anyone who can watch without fascination the struggle for supremacy between sea and land? The sea attacks relentlessly, marshaling the force of its powerful waves against the land's strongest points. It collects the energy of distant winds and transports it across thousands of miles of open ocean as quietly rolling swell. On nearing shore, this calm disguise is suddenly cast off, and the waves rise up as angry breakers, hurling themselves against the land in a final furious assault. Turbulent water, green and white, is flung against sea cliffs and forced into the cracks between the rocks to dislodge them. When the pieces fall, the churning water grinds them against each other to form sand. The sand already on the beach melts away before the onslaught. But the land defends itself with such subtle skill that often it will gain ground in the face of the attack. Sometimes it will trade a narrow zone of high cliff for a whole low beach. Or it may use some of its beach material in a flanking maneuver to seal off arms of the sea that have recklessly reached between the headlands. The land constantly straightens its front to present the least possible shoreline to the sea's onslaught. When the great storm waves come, the beach will temporarily retreat, slyly deploying part of its material in a sandy underwater bar that forces the waves to break prematurely and spend their energies in futile foam and turbulence before they reach the main coast. When the storm subsides, the small waves that follow contritely return the sand to widen the beach again. Rarely can either of the antagonists claim a permanent victory. This shifting battleground is the surf zone and the beach face. The two combatants continue their engagement in a coastal world that exists at the whim of a grander empire, now swept with the winds of climate change. The land will retreat before the rising sea levels with elusive transfers of sediments not seen for millennia. This is their story in the 21st century. Units and variables used in this edition. Units of measurement are fundamental to quantify anything. Here is an attempt to provide an understanding of the jumble of maritime-related units and variables found later in this book that may be difficult for some listeners. The focus is to communicate concept, relative size, and magnitude. Today, all scientific publications use the International System of Units, SI, from the French Système International. In the maritime world, another unit system is inescapable. Imperial units, once used across the British Empire, is still used in the United States. Many international engineering efforts, such as the ill-fated Mars orbiter, have stumbled upon remnants of these units. In this edition, imperial units are used first, followed by SI units in parentheses. Whenever possible, the conversion between units is approximated without diminishing significance. As an example, the unit ton has multiple usages, but all are referred to in this book simply as ton. There is a cornucopia of meanings for this unit. Tons can be used for weight, 2,000 pounds, 1,000 kilograms, or 2,240 pounds for a long ton, or volume such as freight, 40 cubic feet, ship volume, 100 cubic feet per registered ton, petroleum products, about 7 barrels of oil, and sand, 0.6 cubic meters or 0.7 cubic yards. Understand the concept first, then continue on, and if necessary, bypass a confusing jumble of units. Units and conversions. FT. Foot, unit of distance, 0.3048 meters. There are 3 feet per yard, 0.91 meters. LB. Pound, unit of weight, 0.45 kilograms, abbreviated kg. KT. Knot, unit of speed, 1.15 miles per hour, 1.85 kilometers per hour, abbreviated km/h, 0.514 meters per second, abbreviated m/s, 514 centimeters per second, abbreviated cm/s. Cubic yard, unit of volume 9 cubic feet, 0.76 cubic meters, also written m cubed. T. Ton, unit of weight, 2,000 pounds, metric ton is 1,000 kilograms, or volume, 40 cubic feet, or 7 barrels of oil. PSI, pressure, pounds per square inch, force per unit of area, 14.5 PSI is equal to 1 bar. Capital J, joule, unit of work equal to a force times distance, also 1 watt for 1 second. Capital W, watt, unit of power equal to 1 joule per second, also 1,000 watts is equal to 1 kilowatt. KWH, kilowatt hour, unit of energy, power in kilowatts times the number of hours. HP, horsepower, unit of power, approximately 750 watts. Capital F, degrees, unit of temperature. To convert Fahrenheit to Celsius, subtract 32 and multiply by 0.5555. Variables. Capital L, wavelength or distance between two points. D, water depth in units of distance, length. Capital H, wave height measured from trough to crest, peak. F, frequency measured in cycles per unit time. Same as 1 over capital T. 1 cycle per second is 1 hertz, Hz. G. Force of gravity, approximately 32.2 feet per second squared, 9.8 meters per second squared. Greek letter pi, approximated by 3.14, ratio of a circle's circumference to its diameter. Capital T. A period of time, usually in seconds. Greek letter alpha, a measure of angle in degrees. Capital C, velocity expressed as a distance per unit time, from the word celerity, also written lowercase c. COS, cosine, trigonometric function. Tan H, hyperbolic tangent, trigonometric function. Greek letter rho, the density of a material in mass per unit volume. Capital K, a coefficient typically used as a constant with an assigned value. Energy, in units of joules, also in kilotons of TNT, which is equal to 4.184 terajoules. Power, energy expended per unit time. Everything is drifting. The whole ocean moves ceaselessly, just as shifting and transitory as human theories. Fridtjof Nansen, Norwegian oceanographer, explorer, and statesman. 1. Genesis of land, water, and waves. Waves are undulating forms of energy that can propagate through any medium. Wave energy travels throughout the universe. Waves may exist in solids or on the interface between any two fluids of different densities, but this book will deal primarily with those that travel on the surface between the ocean and the atmosphere. Although any kind of disturbance in the water is likely to generate waves, there are three prime natural causes: wind, earthquakes, and the gravitational pulls of the moon and the sun. Wind waves are the most familiar kind. They are also the most variable, and in many ways, the most puzzling. The size and variety of the waves raised by the wind depend on three main factors: the velocity of the wind, the distance it blows across the water, and the length of time it blows. Moreover, the character of the waves changes markedly as they move away from the winds that created them. The earthquake mechanism for wave creation is simpler and, thankfully, less frequent. In this version, a rapid motion of the subsea rocks disturbs a mass of water. In regaining its equilibrium, the water surface oscillates up and down and sends out a series of seismic sea waves, collectively called a tsunami. Tsunami means harbor wave in Japanese, from the characters tsu, meaning harbor, and nami, meaning wave. The tides, which are a special kind of very long wave, are caused by the Earth's turning beneath great bulges of water raised by the combined rotational forces and gravitational fields of the moon and the sun. The wave of climate change is another very long wave. It traverses human generations, yet affects the power and location of winds, the genesis of waves, and the swash of every beach. We have just begun to see and understand its profound influence on all other waves. It is the most important wave ever experienced by civilization, and one that cannot be separated from any conversation about ocean dynamics. Regardless of the mechanism by which a wave is generated, the character of waves and the velocity at which they move are influenced by the depth of the water in which they are traveling. Therefore, in order to understand the behavior of waves, one must also know something about the shapes of the rocky basins that hold the water. So let's first consider the beginnings of the water and the land, the origin of the Earth's surface features. The Earth and its waters. The Earth formed from rocky and metallic fragments during the construction of the solar system, debris that was swept up by an initial nucleus and attracted together into a single body by the force of gravity. The original materials were cold as outer space and dry as dust. Whatever water and gases they contained were locked inside individual fragments as chemical compounds. As the fragments joined, the Earth's gravity increased, attracting larger and larger objects to impact the Earth. This increasing gravity, combined with the timeless radioactive decay of elements like uranium and thorium, caused the new Earth to heat up. The internal temperature was such that many compounds broke down, releasing their water and gases. Plastic flow could occur. Segregation by density began, and the Earth started to organize into its present layered structure. The heaviest metals sank to the center. The lightest materials migrated outward. The massive heat in the Earth led to motions of its rocky interior, much like the convection cell patterns seen in a boiling pot of soup. In turn, this process led to plate tectonics, a process where a conveyor belt of basaltic lowlands formed as the upwelling cell reached the surface, forming the ocean basins. As the basaltic plates dove down into the Earth's interior, they also caused melting, leading to the formation of the lightest rocks, granites, that reached the surface and collected over time into the large blocks now known as continents. At the same time, superheated water and gases were brought to the surface by volcanic activity. The hot, steamy atmosphere cooled and condensed into liquid water, which flowed into low-lying basins. After a few billion years, a global ocean had formed, and the atmosphere was sufficiently dense enough that effective winds could exist to transport the ocean's water vapor over the land. As soon as the evaporation condensation cycle, hydrological cycle, could operate, rains fell, and stream erosion began. During one wave of cooling, a billion or so years ago, solid water, snow and ice, appeared as glaciers on mountains and ice caps at the poles. Fragments of continental rock were carried downhill by the running water and deposited into the ocean. In colder regions, glaciers ground away at the underlying rocks and provided fine sediments to the flowing waters below. The coarser particles were deposited close to shore. The finer ones were carried out to deep water, where they formed sedimentary deposits that tended to smooth the seafloor and raise the sea level. The motions of the new atmosphere created the first wind waves, and these waves began the attack on the primordial shorelines. Just as they do now, the waves undermined sea cliffs, bringing down large chunks of rock, which were ground against each other by the moving water to form sand. The sand mined from the cliffs and the sand mined inland by streams were intermingled, sorted by the movement of the water, and redistributed along the shore. The first beaches formed. As these processes proceeded over millions of years, the segregation of materials in the Earth's interior plate tectonic motions and new water arriving at the surface still occurs. The level of the ocean rose above the edge of its prior natural basin. The prior edges of the continental blocks have been flooded to an average depth of 600 feet, 200 meters, causing many shorelines today to be sandy and rocky. It is well to remember that although the shoreline is important as the place where land and water meet, it is not the rim of the ocean in the geological sense. The true ocean basin begins well offshore, where the edge of the continental rock slopes steeply into the watery abyss. In the basin, the average water depth is nearly 15,000 feet, 4,500 meters, and the great waves race along at high speeds. On the shallow shelves, these same waves are slowed by the drag of the bottom. Therefore, it is on the shallow continental shelves that many of the phenomena described in this book occur. On these shallow shelves, the waves moving landward from the deep ocean are transformed, where they first feel the bottom. It is here where beaches are created and constantly rearranged, where human constructions must meet and resist the force of the ocean's waves. When viewed from space, the surface of Earth appears as primarily liquid, but do not be deceived. There is surprisingly little water on Earth in comparison to Earth's total volume. Of all the water on Earth, about 97% is in the ocean. The forces of nature engage the Earth's water as a weapon in a constant battle with the land. The sun's radiation warms the Earth, forming the atmospheric and oceanic circulation patterns. Once in motion, all are influenced by the Earth's rotation. Warmed tropical air rises and is replaced by cooler air from the north or south. This movement, driven by the heat of the sun and guided by the rotation of the Earth, causes the major winds. Near the equator, the air is relatively still, called the doldrums, but not far to its north or south, the trade winds blow steadily to the west. At higher latitudes, 40 to 50 degrees, the winds blow to the east. These winds raise waves and provide most of the driving force for the great currents of the Earth. The trade winds give rise to the equatorial currents, flowing close to the surface toward the west until they encounter a land mass that turns them away from the equator. The water masses flow to the north or south and eventually close the loop, forming huge eddies or gyres that rotate clockwise in the northern hemisphere and counterclockwise in the southern hemisphere. Each ocean has these great rivers of water, those in the Atlantic being known as the Gulf Stream, North America, and Benguela Current, Africa. In the Pacific, they are the Kuroshio Current, Japan, and the Humboldt Current, Peru, Chile. The smaller Indian Ocean basin has complex ocean currents that reverse their directions between the Arabian Sea and the Bay of Bengal during monsoonal conditions. Waves come in many kinds and sizes, and for that reason, it is best to think of them as a continuous spectrum extending from waves so small that they can hardly be seen to waves so long they are unnoticed in the period of a human lifetime. These subtle ebbs and flows of energy change our climate and affect the polar ice caps, sea level, weather patterns, and global winds, the essence of wave formation. Wave and beach processes only exist with the flow of energy. And today, humans are influencing the Earth's energy flows and climate, its seasons, ice caps, storms and winds, its sediments and sea level. We have become part of the spectrum. The wave spectrum. Waves range in size from the short ripples in a pond to the great storm waves of the ocean and the tides, whose wavelength is half the distance around the Earth. In order to be able to discuss such widely varying kinds and sizes of waves, it is necessary to agree on a standard set of names for the parts of a wave. The principal parts are defined as follows: crest, the high point of a wave; trough, the low point of a wave; wave height, vertical distance from trough to crest; wave length, horizontal distance between adjacent crests; wave period, the time in seconds for a wave crest to traverse a distance equal to one wavelength. There is a direct relationship between wave period and wave length, but wave height is independent of either. Waves are classified according to their period. Most range from less than 1 second to minutes, tsunamis, to hours, tides. Each undulation of each wave changes sea level for a characteristic period of time. Occurrences measured in years, such as El Niño Southern Oscillation, ENSO, bring storm waves, and the thousands of years-long period Milankovitch cycles, Earth's tilt and orbit patterns, affect sea level. The wave spectrum diagram shows that the waves in the ocean are distributed among several major types, each with its characteristic range of periods and influence on sea level. Beginning near the left side of the spectrum with the very short period waves, we have, in order, ripples, with periods of fractional seconds, wind chop, of 1 to 4 seconds, fully developed seas, 5 to 12 seconds, swell, 6 to 22 seconds, surf beat, of about 1 to 3 minutes, tsunamis, of 10 to 20 minutes, and tides, with periods near 12 or 24 hours. Thus, there are many kinds of waves, each generated and developed in a special way. Note that all the water waves just mentioned are called gravity waves because, once they are created, gravity is the force that drives them by attempting to restore the original flat water surface. Each gravity wave is made up of two parts: the crest that rises above the average sea level, and the trough that extends below it. As a group of waves moves over the surface of the water, each crest seems to be forever attempting to overtake the trough ahead, fill it in, and restore equilibrium. The wave source, whatever it was, worked against gravity. One special form of wave not driven by gravity is possibly the most abundant kind of wave on the sea. The first tiny ripples that a light breeze raises on a glassy sea surface, or on the slopes of larger waves, are called capillary waves. Capillary because they are controlled by surface tension and respond to the same forces that cause water to rise in a capillary, very small diameter, glass tubing. The capillary force inside a small glass tube is stronger than gravity, so the water moves slightly upward. Surface tension is a property of liquids that makes them want to pull together and act as though they were covered by an elastic film. This force pulls water molecules together, cohesion, and determines the shape of each capillary wave and form of every drop of water. Capillary waves are often 1 or 2 millimeters high, a few centimeters from crest to crest, and are usually seen in groups of a dozen or so. In the sea, they arise when the drag of moving air stretches the surface and wrinkles the uppermost thin layer of water, where there is a more systematic alignment of the molecules of water. Thus, the size, slope, and velocity of these tiny waves are governed by the elasticity or tension of the surface film. As might be expected in a phenomenon dominated by surface tension, the wave crests of capillary waves are rounded rather than peaked. A rise in the sea temperature will cause surface tension to reduce and viscosity to decrease, and these changes affect how waves are formed. Unlike gravity waves, the shorter wavelengths move faster. Capillary waves give way to the development of
sample complete. Ready to continue?